Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Hey, glad you're along with us. Happy Tuesday morning, one day away from the opening of NFL free agency and the reshaping in part of the Jaguars 2016 roster. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you today. We've got a couple of guests stopping by. We'll get to that coming up here in a moment, Tony. I don't know about you. I told Dan Hicken how I felt about it. I don't like the idea of the Tennessee Titans getting anybody who's proven anything in the National Football League, for that matter, anyone in the AFC South other than the Jacksonville Jaguars. How concerning is it for Jacksonville with DeMarco Murray apparently coming into the division to face them twice a year?
Moderately. I think that Dallas offensive line was so good a couple of years ago, and I think DeMarco Murray was a really good player on top of that, but you saw what happened to him last year. I think the offense fits him a lot better in Tennessee than it did in Philadelphia, so I expect to see a much closer version of what we saw 2 years ago with DeMarco Murray than we saw last year up in Philadelphia, but I think he's a pretty good running back. I don't know that I think that DeMarco Murray is a fantastic running back. I think he's a pretty good one who fits what Malarkey wants. So to that extent, is he better than anything else they had? Yeah, he's clearly better than anything else they had at the running back position. So I expect DeMarco Murray is going to be one of those guys who's going to get 300 touches and 1,300 yards because that's the kind of guy he is. But I don't know that he's a difference maker in Tennessee, at least not in my opinion.
I think he is. And, you know, I think they could give Antonio Andrews and Bishop Sankey 300 carries. None of those guys are getting 1,300 yards.
No, you know, I don't think so.
People say anybody could do what DeMarco Murray did in Dallas behind that offensive line. Well, Darren McFadden did about 800 yards less is what he did behind that offensive line. And, you know, stayed healthy for most of the year. DeMarco Murray, I thought, was exceptional in addition to a great offensive line that he ran behind. I thought he was really exceptional. Now, is he still that guy? 2 years removed, will he be that guy in 2016? Let's hope that's not the case. But I think right now the key word for Jaguar fans is patience, right? Nothing official can get done until tomorrow. And there are some unofficial deals being agreed to. And even these can fall through. By the way, the Philadelphia Eagles, Tony, if Chip Kelly had come in and did what Doug Peterson is doing. Wait a minute. Didn't he do exactly? Aren't they doing the exact same thing? He's coming in and he's cleaning house. He's getting rid of the guys. Now, he's getting rid of guys specifically that Chip Kelly brought in last year, so he's not going to get a whole backlash from that up in Philadelphia. But Chip Kelly came into Philadelphia and got rid of a bunch of high-ticket guys. I wonder what they're going to be saying about Doug Peterson as in his first few days, along with Howie Roseman, the GM, they're shipping out DeMarco Murray. They're shipping out Byron Maxwell, who they just signed to a massive free agent deal last year. Mm-hmm. And they're shipping out Kiko Alonso, who was part of the compensation they got in the Sean McCoy trade last year. Two of those players go to Miami. Alonso does not have a big cap figure. Maxwell has a decent, sizable cap figure. They did create some more space with Ndamukong Suh restructuring his deal. Where do things stand now with Miami from what you can tell in terms of how much flexibility they have financially as we keep our eye on the status of Olivier Vernon?
SpotTrack updates these things pretty quick. So they already have the renegotiation with Jordan Cameron in there as well, which they got done earlier today. And with Suh getting restructured, Koemisi being restructured, cutting Greg Jennings, and everything that they're bringing in with Alonzo Maxwell coming in, restructuring Jordan Cameron, the Miami Dolphins went from a team that was $3.5 million over the cap going into this weekend to a team that is $18.8 million under the cap right now. So they gave themselves a ton of flexibility. I don't know how much of that they can afford to spend on Vernon above the $12.7 that they're already spending on Vernon if he's going to sign that transition tag, but the money's there now that they can potentially match
something. It's interesting because they're a team that's been rumored to have some interest in Mario Williams. Mario Williams apparently is telling teams, if you offer me $10 million a year, I will sign right now, which makes me, you know, I mean, it's an interesting game that's being played here. You've got teams that may be interested in Olivier Vernon, that may also be interested in Mario Williams, but only one of the two. And from a Jaguars perspective, I think Mario Williams going to Miami would help you land Olivier Vernon. I don't think they're going to sign Mario Williams and then bring Olivier Vernon back at a contract that exceeds $12.7 million.
No, probably not.
Down in South Florida. So we'll see how the day plays out in terms of rumors. I'll give you a rumor, and this is all this is a rumor because I did not see this myself. This is tweeted by at Demetrius82, listener of the program, and it was passed along to me by Miles Jacksonville. I like that, Miles Jacksonville. See what he's doing there with the fifth pick in the draft. Demetrius says that he saw this. I went through his timeline on NHL HQ on NFL Network, and that Ian Rappaport suggested that the Jaguars have interest in Doug Martin as well as Chris Ivory. I've not seen Ian Rappaport tweet that, and he typically tweets just about anything that has any kind of legs whatsoever. So I'm just passing that along, and if anyone else can confirm they were watching NFL HQ on NFL Network and heard Rappaport discuss that.
Yeah, like we just got the same exact text in the text line, so some other people are also hearing that.
Okay, and we're sure it's not from the same exact person.
Are we, are I can't confirm that text was from Demetrius, but this was an 894 number that said they also heard Rap Sheet say that.
Okay, well, that's good. I mean, that's you want some rumor to chew on,
yeah,
right there.
He will
there.
Say stuff on TV that he doesn't tweet out.
It does it surprise you that Doug Martin's name is thrown in the mix? Doug Martin is said to want to break the bank.
I know, but no, I'm not surprised that the Jags would be talking to any of these guys. Really, I'm not, and it's because I think they really want to find that other guy for that 1-2 punch and basically make it an even share with what they're doing in the backfield. I don't.
If you
I don't think
Doug
they're
Martin
looking for
$8 million a year, which he's said to be seeking, something like that. Are you making it a 1-2 punch, or you're making it a 1-1-1-1-2 punch?
Doug Martin can say he's seeking whatever he wants to, and I think it's the same thing with the Jags are going to have Mario Williams in. Mario Williams says he wants $10 million a year. I don't think the Jags are paying it. Miami wasn't going to pay it. The Giants weren't going to pay it. He had told everybody that's what he wanted before he went and visited those teams. I think they wanted to have the conversation with Mario Williams, and if the market's going to come down a little bit, they'll come back to him. And I think that's what teams are waiting on with Mario Williams. I think Doug Martin could find himself in a very similar situation. Lamar Miller is drawing a lot of interest as well. I know the Houston Texans are talking about wanting to get Lamar Miller in for a visit as soon as they possibly can, among some other teams. I think I'm curious to see where the numbers are actually going to land with those guys. DeMarco Murray was unbelievable in Dallas 2 years ago and got $8 million a year. I don't think Doug Martin's going to be anywhere close to that when everything is said and done. He can want it all he wants. That doesn't mean that's what he's going to get. And I think it's a fine move by the Jags if they want to have him come in and talk to him about what they can do with it.
It surprises me in the sense that Doug Martin doesn't strike me as a guy who's going to come and, you know, he wants to get away from the timeshare situation that he was in, I think, with Charles Sims. He was the lead carrier there. And maybe, I guess, something comparable to what he had in Tampa would be okay. But he would come off the field on third downs for Charles Sims as a pass-catching back. With what the Jags invested in T.J. Yeldon and how they talk about T.J. Yeldon, I'm a little bit surprised that it would be a guy that's accomplished as much as Doug Martin has, second in the league in rushing last year. I think Chris Ivory fits exactly. By the way, the text that we got on the text line had the exact wording as the original tweet I read. So I'm going to assume that's either the same person who tweeted it or a copy and paste, and I'm going to count that as one source. So if anyone else has heard that on NFL HQ, pass that along to us as well. Here's one from John. Says, I heard also about the Jags being interested in Doug Martin and Chris Ivory. So apparently Ian Rappaport is at least throwing that out there today. So we'll see how that goes. Offensive line, yes, but the fact that J.R. Sweezy is the first name you hear, Tony, kind of indicates that they like the guys they have. Yes, they want an upgrade, but they're not looking to break the bank on Kelechi Osemele or Alex Mack. Doesn't mean they won't, but, you know, typically the agents for those type players like to get it out there. Who has been in contact with them? They want to stoke the market. The team you see right now associated with, it seems like every other free agent that's named is the Oakland Raiders. Those guys are getting ready to spend. Hopefully the Jags are as well. Hopefully they spend it wisely. Today's question of the day, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, focuses on free agency, as you might expect on the eve of the opening of free agency. We ask you today, what will it take for you to be satisfied with the Jaguars' efforts in free agency this year? And some people have already answered, well, it depends on what they do this season. Well, what will it take for you to be satisfied, say, 2 weeks from today, as you look back and who the Jags were able to sign. Are you going to be content with one high-level player? Is it going to take three or four of those type players? Are you just going to have confidence, as long as Dave Caldwell spends money, that he's done his due diligence to bring in the right people to fit the systems here in Jacksonville on both sides of the football? Share your thoughts with us on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at 1010XL Tyler on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. If you want to get in, talk Jaguar football today, 641-1010 is both the phone number and the text line. Today, joining us, coming up in about 20 minutes or so, Brian Coughlin, son of the headmaster, Tom Coughlin, is going to be in to talk about the J Funds Wine Tasting Gala, which takes place next Friday, the 18th, with tickets still available at tcjfund.org. We'll talk about that coming up. Also, Marcus Pollard. We had hoped to have him on yesterday, but we weren't down here at Everbank, so we're going to have him join us this morning. Talk about not only what's going on with the Jags. He, of course, is a player development liaison here in Jacksonville, and but also his time catching footballs from the guy who just retired yesterday, and we're not talking about Logan Mankin. So all that coming up and more. It's Jaguars Today on a Tuesday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, live at Everbank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank. It is free agent season, just about officially free agent season, opening up tomorrow. It's Jaguars Today here live at Everbank. We'll talk TCJ Fund coming up in about 15, 20 minutes or so with Brian Coughlin, son of Tom. And we'll get into that, Tony. Some reports coming out right now. Rand Getlin reporting that it's like Kelechi Osemele will end up an Oakland Raider when free agency opens up tomorrow. I never got the sense the Jags were in or interested all that much as I was anyway in Kelechi Osemele. I think they have more faith in some of their offensive linemen. I think they do need a new starter in there, or at least somebody to come in and provide competition. I guess it comes down to, in part, how they feel about guys like Luke Bolanco, who is a forgotten man, and Tyler Shatley. Can one of those guys, and if you want those guys to be able to compete for a starting position, the likelihood would have to come against, you know, kind of a mid-tier guy. You bring in a J.R. Sweezy type. I don't know if he's guaranteed a starting spot, even though he's been a starter in Seattle. You bring in a Kelechi Osemele or an Alex Mack, he's an automatic starter on this football team. And I'd be fine with that. It just doesn't appear that they're going to go the high-end route on the offensive line.
No, and it's really not all that surprising, given, you know, the way that they feel about what they can do at center and right guard right now, and they have a bunch of different guys that they can at least put in there at that left guard spot. So it's not all that surprising that they don't want to spend a ton of money on that spot potentially in free agency. I'm curious to see what they're going to do to address it, because I don't necessarily think the guy that's going to be starting at left guard is on the roster right now. He could be, but I don't necessarily think that he is, and it's certainly the position on that line that they got to look at to at least some degree. I don't think they're going to address center in free agency. That means even Wisniewski, I don't expect them to have Wisniewski back unless the market really dries up for him and they say, all right, he knows the offense. He was fine here last year. We can get him on this kind of deal. Let's do it. And that way you could play Cannon and Linder at both guard spots or whatever you want to do with those guys. Wiz could play one of the guard spots potentially too. So if it really dried up for Wiz, maybe he's back. But that's the only way I see them bringing him back. I really just don't see the Alex Mack thing happening.
We saw yesterday the Cleveland Browns reportedly have interest in Stefan Wisniewski, which indicates to me that they probably are realizing that Alex Mack is going to price themselves out of what they're willing to pay to get him, and they're looking at alternatives. So if that's the case, and they do, in fact, lose Alex Mack. Now, I think if he wanted to come back for similar money than he was making, if he finds the market not as robust as he thought it was, that they would keep that spot for him. So it may be a wait-and-see type situation with Wisniewski. He may have to wait to see if Alex Mack, gets something done quickly in the opening days of free agency and whether or not he moves on immediately or he lingers out there for a few days. Report in from Jordan Ronan of NJ.com. Actually, does a pretty good job covering the Giants. I've talked to this guy a few times. And he says the Giants are not in play for Mario Williams, or Mario Williams is not in play for the Giants. Either way, maybe it's the asking price of $10 million, but they are said to not be a team that is going to pursue him aggressively. The Dolphins did have a visit with Mario Williams. Obviously, they didn't offer him $10 million because he said he'd sign on the dotted line. The Jags were reported by Mike Garofalo to have some interest and Mario Williams. Jags also were linked to Adrian Claiborne yesterday, the former Tampa Bay Buccaneer. The Giants have shown interest reportedly in both Claiborne and William Hayes. So limited market for free agents. I tell you what, if the Jags' first couple signings are J.R. Sweezy and Adrian Claiborne, there'll be a lot of disappointed fans here in Jacksonville. Doesn't mean those guys won't turn out to be terrific values or anything like that. And I'm not going to say, woe is me yet, because we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going on behind closed doors,
no.
What kind of conversations are taking place with the likes of Olivier Vernon's representatives right now.
Is this the time of year where we have to mention again that we would just like the – we enjoy it when the Jags are linked to guys, and we would like it if they would announce that they're talking to guys so that everybody knows that, yes, we're in on these guys.
Like, we would
we
like
have that,
that
conversation every year. At
right.
this time when free agency opens, just tell us that you're talking to them. We just want to know. We want the whole world to know, yes, the Jags are in on all these guys if they are.
Does it benefit you, though?
No, I don't think it does.
In the long run,
we have that conversation
us,
every
right?
year.
No,
yeah.
I agree with you. So I think if I were in Dave Caldwell's position, I would be, you know, I would have high levels of paranoia. I would want no one to know what I was thinking or who I was talking to, if at all possible. You know how Belichick has done it in years past? If you discuss the fact that the Patriots have interest in you, all of a sudden the Patriots don't have interest in you anymore. I don't know if the Jags are in that kind of position where they can just say, hey, you know what, talk, and we're going to pull our money off the table.
Right.
You know, they haven't become a destination spot yet, but they have a ton of money to spend, but so do a lot of other places out there. Olivier Vernon's going to get paid by somebody this offseason.
Oh, yeah, and with Assimile going to Oakland, it would appear the highest paid on average offensive guard in the league right now is Mike Iupati, who signed in free agency last year. It's $8 million a year. They expect Osimile to be well north of that. They expect it to be north of $10 million a year for Osimile when everything is said and done. Now, he has the flexibility to play tackle as well.
He's
so
27,
right,
I think.
That
26.
Affects the number. But the offensive guard market, as Rand Gentlin put following up the tweet about him going to Oakland, is going to – the roof's about to get blown off it.
Right.
With the deal for Kelechi, because the market was so hot for him. There were so many teams that wanted in, and the decision came pretty quick for him. So whatever the Raiders were offering, we don't know what it is yet, but it's going to be big money for him.
No question. They've got big money to spend, and they're one of those teams that needs to spend not just – cap space, Tony, but they need to spend cash as a percentage of the cap, as that whole thing is starting to catch up on a four-year run. I think you need to spend 89% of the cap as cash in any given year. And what that means is, let's say you've got $20 million in cap space, right? And you sign a guy to a $5 million a year contract, but he's got a $15 million signing bonus, right? I'm just making up numbers here. Well, that signing bonus hits in this year. $5 million of that salary hits in this year. So even though you're only paying him $5 million and the cap hit would be prorated, that bonus, the cash you're spending counts towards that figure, if that makes sense. So there's a lot of machinations going on with the CBA right now. The NFLPA likes to stay on top of that and point out just exactly how much room every team has left to spend, because they are trying to encourage them to spend as freely as possible. Here's a couple on the text line this morning at 641-1010. We asked you, what would it take for you to be satisfied with the Jaguars' free agency efforts in 2016, noting the fact that free agency hasn't officially opened yet. This one here. My entire Jag season ticket decisions ride on if Caldwell gets big names. If he does, I consider. If not, I don't. First time in 5 years I'm on the fence. That's Chris on the south side saying that. I mean, that's his
prerogative. Kind of the question is, what qualifies as a big name?
Right. Is Olivier Vernon a big name, or did he become one by his inclusion on lists for the top free agents available? I think it's more the latter, right? Because the guy, again, he's had 14 sacks total in the last 2 years. He had one double-digit sack season out of four in the National Football League. Now, the number crunchers love him because he gets a lot of pressure, and that didn't necessarily show up in the sack column last year, but the feeling is pressure is something that is more consistent. If you can continue to bring pressure, eventually the sack totals will even out, and the feeling is as much pressure as he applied, I think he was third best in the league among defensive ends in the second half of the year.
Yep.
That typically you could have expected a higher sack total out of a guy like that. So the feeling is there's hidden pass rush value, or at least sack value, with Olivier Vernon.
Yeah, and that's when his role expanded in that Miami defense, too, with the injury to Cameron Wake, and the pressures just went off the roof. for Olivier Vernon last year when that happened. So that's the excitement with that guy, is that he's young and has been pretty good getting after the quarterback.
Here's one in from the 904 side. Two of either Irving, Malik Vernon, or Mario, also a starting caliber interior lineman and a free safety. Then draft Ramsey first and Joshua Perry in the second, or Miles Jack first and the best available safety or corner second. That's all it'll take, just to do exactly right as we've laid out. Here's one coming in as well. It says, come on, guys, you have the second most pressures in the league. I thought it was third. Excuse me for being off on
shortchanged him a little
second
bit.
Second or third. Let's see. Here's one here, Tony. Would you be open to the Jags trying to get Ray Rice in the offseason?
No.
A hearty no to that one.
And it's not about the elevator thing, although that affects it.
He was terrible. Right.
He was terrible his last year in Baltimore.
He was terrible and hasn't played now in, 2 years?
Yeah, the conversation that continues with Ray Rice is just absurd. He was no good the last time he played in an offense that he should have been comfortable in. No. That combined with the off-field, never.
No, right. It came in, so we answer the question. New mock draft out, or a slew of them out at CBS. We'll take a look at these a little bit later on. I mentioned this at the top of the show. Will Brinson's got, I believe, his first one out of the year, and he's thrown a trade to the top of the draft with Jared Goff being selected by the San Francisco 49ers. We talked about this yesterday. The nightmare scenario is if no quarterbacks go in the first four picks. The dream scenario is if two quarterbacks go. Right now, I'll be satisfied if one goes, at least based on the way we feel about these prospects. We don't know how they feel about Joey Bosa here, or, you know, Miles Jack, or Jalen Ramsey, for that matter. We feel like they would like some, if not all, of those guys to be a guy they would be comfortable with the fifth pick overall. But I want to give them options. I want them to have as many of those to choose from as possible. Taking two quarterbacks ahead of that would certainly give them the option between at least a couple of those guys, assuming Laramie Tunsil comes off the board. But you could throw him in the mix in terms of impact players as well. If you go out and sign a guard, though, right? Let's say worst-case scenario now, Tony. Go out and sign a guard, and no quarterbacks go, and Jack, Bosa, and Ramsey are all gone, and maybe another defensive player, maybe Buckner, is gone as well, and the Jags just don't want to draft an offensive lineman with that fifth pick, which may be the screaming value. I think that's a long-shot scenario.
Sure.
But, as one of the alternative scenarios to what everyone's saying, they're going to have their choice of either Miles Jack or Joey Bosa or Jalen Ramsey. I think Tunsil's a hell of a player. I don't think the Jags are keen on trying to find the replacement for Luke Joeckel with the fifth pick in this year's draft. We'll come back. Brian Coughlin going to join us from the Tom Coughlin J Fund, their wine tasting gala coming up next Friday. Tickets still available at tcjfund.org. We'll discuss the charity event coming up. We'll take your calls as well if you're so inclined at 641-1010, and keep the text coming in at the same number on the text line as well. Question of the day, what will satisfy you in terms of the Jaguars' efforts in free agency this year? What will it take? You can talk about what kind of players you want them to sign, specific players you want them to sign, holes being plugged, you name it. Give us your feedback on Twitter and on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
Hi, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. By the way, that promo, Tony, I think I contributed significantly to that promo that we just heard a moment ago. That's me right there. And for a guy who doesn't get a whole lot of airtime, seems like Lamb screws up a good deal, right? I mean, that's a whole reject reel from David Lamb right there. All right, moving along here. We'll get back to free agency rumors in a second, unless you've got some news over there.
I do have some news. Mike Florio on Pro Football Talk is reporting, since this is a name that has been linked to Jacksonville and could affect significantly what may happen tomorrow around 4 o'clock. The Dolphins and Mario Williams, according to Florio, may be trying to get a deal done as soon as today. So we'll see if the number came down for Mario or what the deal is. Again, Miami with about $18.5 million in cap space right now. It's not a done deal, but Mike Florio at least reporting that they expect to try to get one done today.
I would think that would mean that they're moving on from Olivier.
I would think so, too.
Right? They think you can get Mario Williams as a cheaper alternative, and that's part of what Dave Caldwell talks about. When a guy's free, a free agent, why? Why is he free? His team that had him doesn't feel like he's worth paying more than $12.7 million on the one-year deal. Keep in mind, too, I think we misspoke earlier, as a guy on the transition tag, Olivier Vernon is not eligible to be legally tampered with. Why do we call it legal tampering anymore? It's not tampering if you're allowed to do it, right? You're not allowed to legally pre-negotiate with Olivier Vernon until 4 o'clock tomorrow because he is not an unrestricted free agent. So clearing that up, we don't know what kind of efforts will be made on the Jags' behalf. Can you call his agent and say, hey, we want to call you. We want to be the first one to call you at 4 o'clock and 1 second. Can you give us a special number to call? Like, how do you get in line? Or is it just the luck of the draw? You start calling at 3:57 and go, oops, I'm a little bit early.
My clock says 4.
Let's welcome in here to the Metro Diner chat counter on Jaguars today.
We're working on Coughlin time. That's why we called 10 minutes early.
Time. Brian, what time did Brian Coughlin show up for a 10:35 radio appearance, Tony? About 10:15?
Oh, yeah.
I love that. How are you, Brian? Good to see you.
Doing great. Good to see you guys. And with all due respect to the palatial 1010 XL facilities, I like it coming here much better. There's some old friends I get to see and some good memories.
Yeah, he's like, I'm early. I'm going to go talk to Sexton. I'm going to go chat up all my boys around these parts. Coughlin is a well-respected name and always will be in the halls of Everbank. First of all, how are you? How's everything going with the J Fund and the family in general?
Everybody's doing very well. Thank you for asking. We're excited to get into sort of the busy time for the J Fund. We have big events coming up here soon and then the golf tournament in May. So we're plugging along. Kelly's very busy. The Coughlin family's focused and ready to get after it.
Now, what is Pop focused on right now? He's on the Madden committee, which you explained to us is a subcommittee of coaches that's a subcommittee to the overall NFL rules committee. Is that correct?
That's right. He's in his element there no matter what. I imagine he'd have been there regardless. But he still is involved with the Madden committee, and our family added my father and mother's 12th grandchild about 2 weeks ago. My sister Kate up in Jersey had a daughter, so he's got some family duties as well.
Congratulations! I couldn't imagine. If Brian said, "Hey, Dad's out on the boat, he's dropping a line in the water." No way.
Nope.
You kidding me? And we'll get to more on what's going on with the J Fund. Do you think in your gut, if the opportunity arises, will your dad coach again in the National Football League?
I think he wants to be involved. I think he would love to have a advisory type role during the short term here to decide whether he wants to devote the full time and energy to being a coach. I think if given the right opportunity, he'd have a hard time saying no. But please understand, this is just my view.
Understood. That's what your opinion. That's what we said. Look, we're going to pull all the 12 grandchildren as well and see if we can come up with a consensus on Pop on what he's going to be doing.
Yeah, but he's not wired like the rest of us. I think he'll want to stay involved and involved in the manner he has for the last 20, 25 years.
Which is why he is as successful as he is, because he's not wired like the typical person. He's very driven, and I think it's rubbed off on your family in general, and it's rubbed off with the work we see and the dedication to this charity that Tom started, going back years now here in Jacksonville, and the fact that he kept this up and running in Jacksonville. He's got the branch up in New York, and some other city would be lucky to have him come in for a time and expand the reach of the J Fund. And for folks who don't know what the J Fund is, Jay McGillis, a player who played for Coach Coughlin at Boston College, passed away of leukemia, I believe it was.
That's
and
right.
He saw, the hell it put the family through, and the things that you don't focus on. The disease is terrible in and of itself, but the impact on the family emotionally, financially, psychologically, all these different ways. He wanted to, memorialize Jay and do it in a way that made him a living legacy and to help other families, and that's been able to be accomplished through the J Fund, where you guys are helping families that are impacted by a diagnosis of childhood cancer and have been doing it now for years. You hate to say, how's it going? Because you'd like to reach a point where the need for the J Fund would be eradicated, but that time is nowhere close to being here, it appears.
It does not appear so. Our aid to people who are facing these issues is more and more needed every year. We've given out more money in the past year than we have any calendar year before that, approaching $700,000 in this area alone. That doesn't include New York, New Jersey. and the numbers keep going up. So we need to continue to grow, and with the help of everybody who's assisting us, including 1010XL, we look forward to continuing to be able to provide that financial, emotional, and practical help to families that are facing this just very dire situation.
That's kind of the point you're going. There's kind of a theme every year that you go with, financial, emotional, practical, kind of encompasses the areas you're trying, the different levels you're trying to help out in these situations, right?
That's right. Everybody, as you alluded to, families, when they're faced with a child with cancer, drop everything and run to the bedside to be there. Father, mother, the job is in the background. Obligations with mortgages and rents and filling up the gas tank even, those things fall by the wayside, and we try and bring them the financial assistance they need to focus on what's most important. With that is the emotional help that we give with counseling and social workers and the partnerships that we have in the community, and then the practical help, budgeting. Because we don't have an endless amount of resources to help. We wish we did, but budgeting is something that we're starting to help families with. And so it's anything we can do to assist these families who are dealt a hand that none of us would ever want to dream to have.
Brian Coughlin, our guest here in studio at EverBank Field with the Tom Coughlin J-Fund Wine Tasting Gala coming up next Friday the 18th at the Wells Fargo Center. This is the one must-attend event for me every year. Absolutely love this event. My wife and I are homebodies most of the year, not on this occasion, and we do it the right way. We get a room at the Omni. We walk the couple blocks to the Wells Fargo Center, and we then have no responsibilities. We enjoy the night. People think, oh, it's a wine tasting day. It is expanded to 3.5 hours this year. It's going to go until 9:30. There's a silent auction with all kinds of great goodies, but give us an example of just the breadth of the different kind of wines, the different kind of restaurants that are involved. It's such a fantastic event.
We got some cool names this year, and just on the wine alone, we've got wines owned in part by Dave Matthews, the musician. His wine is called Dreaming Tree Wines. Z. Alexander Brown Wines is owned by the musician Zach Brown. We've got Argentinian wines, California wines, and the restaurants are a who's who of who you would want to spend a night out with, and you get them all in the same place. You've got 11 South, Matthews. You've got places like Orsay and River City and Roy's. It's a place where you can come and eat the food of the best restaurants in the area, have great wine, great company, good conversation. And when it's over, there's probably going to be some basketball on that you can retire to.
that's a good point, too. It usually coincides, or it has in recent years, with the opening rounds of the NCAA tournament. Brian, you look at it, it's $130 per ticket, and there's still how many tickets approximately available to the event?
We make around 800 available, and we're inside of 150. So
okay.
They're going.
You guys are kind enough to invite me every year. I went ahead and bought an extra set of tickets so I can bring a couple of friends of mine.
Great.
Who've never experience it before, because I tell people what a great event it is. So I feel like I'm trying to do my part with that. And when you talk about that money, people say, you know, that's a lot of money. Well, the percentage of money that you're able to turn around from your donations that go directly to help families through the J Fund is staggering. It's north of 90%, isn't it?
It's in that area, and it's a priority that my father set long ago, and we all agree with him. There are issues in the media now where nonprofits are being scrutinized for the amount of money that actually goes to good. We make sure to stay well above 85% to make sure that that much money goes to the families who need the help. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, it is staggering when you look at some of the charities and you see how much overhead a lot of them have and the salaries people are drawing. The money that you can feel good that the vast majority of your dollar that you're giving to the J Fund is then being turned around to help communities, the community right around you, families. They may be your next door neighbor. They may be your family. You never know. It may be you one day that needs it. You hope that it's not. But that night, your dad will obviously be there. Some local celebrities such as Gus Bradley typically makes an appearance. Dave Caldwell makes an appearance. If you're a Jaguar fan or a football fan in general, get to rub shoulders with some of the elite of the National Football League, and those guys are kind enough to stop and pose for photos. They get the deal and stuff like that. So it's more than just kind of walking around with your date that night. You see a little bit of the who's who of the Jacksonville scene as well.
That's right. Great people. All of our sponsors turn out in great numbers. There's good networking. The silent auction items are often very good from the sports world, travel packages, wines. all kinds of fun things to do. And so we hope that it's a win-win for everybody and that they have a wonderful night out with the people they care about and can also support the J Fund.
So you got around 150 tickets left for the event. Where can our listeners go if they want to be involved?
The easiest thing to do is to go to tcjfund.org. That's tcjayfund.org and order your tickets there.
And for maybe some of the listeners that wine and food may not be their thing, I know that sounds crazy.
What are you?
That the wine and food may not be their thing, but what other events do you have coming up maybe in the next couple months that they can be involved in as well?
The Golf Classic out at the Players is in May. All the information about the Golf Classic is at that same website I gave. So please, whatever suits your fancy, please support us when you have the opportunity.
Do them both. Right,
you
know
what?
Yeah. There's no limit, or just you know what? If you don't have time to go to the event and you think it's worthwhile, buy a couple tickets for some friends of yours. Do something, you know what I mean? Or just make a donation, and it doesn't have to be $130 or $260. It can be $50. It can be $20. Anything is always appreciated by the J Fund and always put to good use. I absolutely told you, the spectacular event for $130. You go to a fancy restaurant and see if you don't get out of there with close to a $250 tab at some of the places we're talking about in town. And
you're going to drink wine, especially.
Right? If you're going to drink wine and eat off the top shelf menus that we're talking about here, you can walk around. It truly, it's from 6 until 9:30 this year. I think I begged for an extra half hour, Tony, and I got it this year. So I mean, 3.5 hours, you're going to be absolutely stuffed. Please be smart and arrange some transportation if you're going to be like me and partaking of the wine next Friday night. But I look forward to it, Brian. All kidding aside, I will take down one of those golf packages in the silent auction. That's my goal every year coming in, and I've been never been disappointed walking away with that. It's just a lot of fun, and you know, the root cause is such a great thing that helps this community, and that's the bottom line. Your family has done a tremendous job with the J Fund, not just your dad, but you and Kelly and everybody that have been associated with it. I hate to leave anybody out, but a lot of other people, a lot of volunteers that make it happen. So again, TCJFund.org. That's the easiest way, right?
That's the easiest way, and thank you guys for all the help you've given us over the years. We look forward to a long future of continued cooperation.
Yeah, we look forward to the day when it's not necessary. I don't know if they're going to eradicate childhood cancer anytime soon, so let's hope we all support the J Fund for as long as it is necessary and support it in record-breaking fashion every single year. Brian Coughlin, everybody, appreciate you taking the time to stop in with us today.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, you got it. We'll see you next Friday down at the Wells Fargo Center, and hope to see a bunch of you out there in Radio Land as well. Remember, tickets, $130 each. You get a pair for $260 at tcjfund.org, tcjayfund.org, or you can call 904-543-2599. That's 543-2599 for the J Fund to find out more information about the Wine Tasting Gala coming up at the Wells Fargo Center next Friday night. Coming back to State and Football and the Honda Drive Around the NFL. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, a little bit of what happened on this date in football history. Way back in 1967, March the 8th, the New Orleans Saints were allowed to begin selling season tickets as they had just been granted their franchise rights, and they sold 20,000 on the first day. Saints have had a pretty loyal fan base ever since then, although they did appear on the brink of moving before Hurricane Katrina wrecked New Orleans. It looked like they might end up in San Antonio, but now seem poised to stay in New Orleans for a long, long run. Others born on this date, Jason Elam, NFL kicker, at one point tied the record with a 63-yard field goal with the Denver Broncos in that mile-high atmosphere. Born on this date in 1970, so he's 46. Super Bowl 40 MVP. We like to call it Super Bowl XL around here, Tony. That would be Hines Ward, your Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah.
Four-time Pro Bowler. How many catches, over under on 1,000 catches for Hines Ward?
Under.
Push! It's 1,000. He has 1,000 catches. Exactly. Also, born in this state, happy birthday to Jaguars cornerback, third round pick in 2013, Dwayne Grotz. Turns 26 years old today. Oh, bubblegum. He's done his best to put that in the rearview mirror, but if he wants to stick, with his bubble gum on this roster, he's going to have to play his butt off this summer. No guarantee that he's going to be a member of this football team, in my opinion, in 2016. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
After signing a five-year, $40 million deal with Philadelphia last offseason, running back DeMarco Murray appears to be on his way out of the city of brotherly love. Murray and his agent were given permission to seek a trade at the end of the year and have reportedly found a trade partner in the Tennessee Titans. The deal is expected to be announced tomorrow as the league year begins, which was the same time that LeSean McCoy was seemingly traded out of nowhere last year to Buffalo from Philadelphia in exchange for linebacker Kiko Alonso, who, like Murray, is reportedly on his way out of Philadelphia after just 1 year. Alonso, along with cornerback Byron Maxwell, are expected to be traded tomorrow to the Miami Dolphins. The Indianapolis Colts and free agent-to-be tight end Dwayne Allen agreed to a new four-year, $29.4 million contract to keep him in Indy. According to Dan Graziano, the New York Giants have offered defensive end Jason Pierre-Paul a one-year deal. The Giants had Mario Williams in for a visit, but word is out now that Williams and the Miami Dolphins are nearing a deal that could be in the $8 million a year range, according to Jason Cole. Rand Getlin of the NFL Network is reporting that the Oakland Raiders and free agent Kelechi Osemele have agreed to terms on a new deal in principle, and Osemele is set to become a member of the Raiders tomorrow when free agency opens. Ian Rappaport is saying that it's expected to make him one of the five highest-paid offensive linemen in the league, with the deal expected to be over $11 million a year, probably indicating that the Raiders are looking to play him at tackle, would be my guess.
You would think so. Seems more like tackle money than guard money, and so be it, Kelechi Osemele. That's not what, it's what a guy I would have loved to have seen in Jacksonville. Didn't expect it to happen. Mario Williams, I'm fine with him getting down to South Florida if that, in fact, opens up Olivier Vernon for the Jaguars, because I think, you know, he is a highly coveted target of theirs. And much like with the franchise tag, Tony, with the transition tag, if you don't sign it, the club can rescind that tag. And I guess the feeling in South Florida now is if they can get something done with Mario Williams today, they may in fact take that off, because then what happens if you transition tag a guy and you have the right to match it, and someone signs and you opt not to match it, you don't get a compensatory pick in next year's draft. But if you lose what would be deemed a high-profile free agent, and that is based on a combination of the contract he got and his level of play, and certainly I think Olivier Vernon was going to qualify for that, the Dolphins, if they remove the transition tag and then he signs in Jacksonville or anywhere else for that matter, will likely get as high as a third-round draft pick next year, a late third-rounder, for losing him, which is, you know, it's not always the worst thing in the world. That's part of the thing, what you do with those picks. The Baltimore Ravens have, over the years, accumulated those. You can't trade conditional draft picks.
No, but that sounds like it may change this offseason.
Right, which I'd be fine. I mean, it's a commodity, right? Why shouldn't you be able to do it?
Yeah.
The reason that I think they don't want you to be able to trade conditional draft picks is when you're losing free agents, they want to maintain some level of competitive balance. That's why you get the compensatory pick thrown in for a high-profile free agent you lose. So I think if you've got a Wheeler dealer who wants to go all in, you know, and they don't want to see franchises get wrecked by losing free agents and then making bad decisions. I say franchises make bad decisions all the time. I mean, look at the Detroit Lions. They haven't been to a Super Bowl in their history, for instance, and there are others, perennial teams that seem to be bottom dwellers, at least for most of recent history, at least. And why should you save those guys from themselves?
Yeah, and some breaking news in the NFL, by the way. The Lions are reporting that Calvin Johnson is officially going to retire from the National Football League. That decision was expected to come down today. We all kind of knew the direction that story was going, but Calvin Johnson of the Detroit Lions looks like he is going to officially retire from the National Football League. And look, I think it's interesting the situation that Miami has put themselves in, renegotiating the contracts that they did to create some cap space. It made it look like maybe they are putting themselves in a position to match the kind of money that Olivier Vernon was going to get. But the talk a couple days ago coming out of Miami was they don't want or need one, they need two. Like, they feel like they need two. And if Olivier Vernon's going to be $15 million, I don't think they want to spend $23 million on him and Mario Williams. I think they're going to try to go after that Hayes, Ayers, a different route. And it sounds like Cameron Wake's days in Miami may be over as well, as he was not willing, according to Jason Cole, to renegotiate that contract to give them a lower number. The Dolphins said they'd like to keep him, but he's 34 years old coming off an Achilles injury. There's just no way.
Look, Jordan Cameron, I get him confused like you do all the time. Jordan Cameron, their tight end, right? Young guy,
yeah,
right? Just renegotiated his deal down from $7.5 to $6 million. Basically took $1.5 million pay cut, right? Well, because he sat there and said, somebody got to pay me $6 million this year on another team. I could lock this in, $6 million right now. Cameron Wake is 34 years old, coming off a torn Achilles, and prior to tearing the Achilles, was not having a good year last year. Does he think he's going to get more than $8 million? Or what? I know that's his cap hit is $8 million plus. I don't know what the exact salary is, but I imagine it's something approaching that, at least, in 2016.
Yeah, I can look it up and see exactly what the number is for Cameron Wake. But I think, you know, he's at that point where he's not getting another contract. Right, he's not getting another contract, and maybe he can feel he sees the light at the end of the tunnel when it comes to his NFL playing career. And you want to keep that number as high as you can so that you can, you know, that one-time deal where you can say, I'm going to take the money anyway if you get cut or whatever. He may be looking at it that way. I'm going to get this $9 million or whatever it is. I'm not renegotiating it down.
But that's only if you're on the opening day roster. You don't get that if you get cut in the offseason.
Yeah.
You have to be on the opening day roster to take the termination pay.
$8.275 million
is what he's scheduled to make.
And it's his last year of his deal.
All right, you know what? I'll take five.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Who is going to pay a 34-year-old coming off a torn Achilles?
Yep. Last year of his deal.
I don't see that happening for him. I think he's getting bad advice as far as that goes. But as you mentioned a moment ago in passing, Calvin Johnson is going to be stepping aside. I'm assuming that means he is filing the retirement papers and he will go on the Detroit Lions reserve retired list. And the reason that's important is if he decides to change his mind, he can't come back, say, mid-season and say, hey, Patriots, can I make a Super Bowl run with you or something like that? And so it appears that he was serious when those rumors came out that he was going to step aside. And he's just had enough. And look, I have no problem with it.
No.
It's his career. He's 31 years old. He's made tons of money. If he's been at all fiscally smart, he never has to work a day in his life. Probably generations of his family never have to work again. You know, it's not worth it to him to chase statistical records. I'm sure he'd love to win. Does he feel like Detroit's on the brink of all of a sudden winning a Super Bowl? Probably not.
Right.
I guess the wear and tear on his body is outweighing the fun he's having playing football.
Well, the legs have been an issue for Calvin Johnson now for a couple of years. Really up there in Detroit, he's really been banged up. I can understand the decision he's making. I can understand the idea of I'd rather go somewhere else where I'm going to have the opportunity to win. I think you could look at it from Calvin's perspective and say, if I could just hang on for two or three more years and keep aggregating stats, basically, I may be clinching myself a gold jacket. With the kind of talent that he is coming into this league, I'm not sure that he's a surefire Hall of Famer at this point, retiring.
Calvin?
Yeah.
I think he is.
I think he's a guy that's probably going into the Hall of Fame. I think two more years and you wouldn't have any questions about it.
I'm not saying I'm guaranteeing he'll be in on the first ballot.
He's
a
Hall of Fame talent.
I'm saying if he's on my ballot, he's getting my vote.
Yeah.
I think Calvin Johnson is as good as maybe any wide receiver not named Jerry Rice or Randy Moss. I think he's better than Terrell Owens. I just don't think he played as long as Terrell Owens.
And that 2021 class for the Hall of Fame is going to be incredible. Peyton Manning, Charles Woodson, Marshawn Lynch, Jared Allen, and now Calvin Johnson.
Yeah, hey, Jared Allen and Marshawn Lynch, you're not on that level. I mean, you're good players and maybe worthy both of being in the Hall of Fame. You're not on the Peyton Manning, Charles Woodson,
and possibly
Calvin
Andre
Johnson level.
Too.
Andre says he's going to keep playing.
Yeah.
Andre or Calvin, who gets in for you?
Calvin.
Me too, right? If we're a
choice. But I would put both of them in ahead of Marshawn Lynch.
Probably would as well. But certainly just in a decision between those two receivers. Not saying they both won't eventually make it in, but numbers are funny in today's NFL, man. The numbers have exploded. And, you know, you were talking about yesterday was Lynn Swann's birthday. Today was Hines Ward's birthday. Hines Ward's numbers dwarf those of Lynn. Hines Ward has over 600 more catches than Lynn Swann ever did in a Pittsburgh uniform. Lynn Swann's a Hall of Famer. Hines Ward will be a guy who gets discussed. I don't think he's anything close to a lock, and may take him quite a while to get in to the Hall of Fame. We'll see how that goes. Marcus Pollard going to join us. He's the Jags Director of Player Development, and he, of course, was a longtime NFL tight end and I believe caught the fifth most touchdown passes from Peyton Manning in his career. We'll talk with him next about the retirement of Peyton Manning and what he sees going on with the Jags this offseason and what there is from his perspective to be excited about here as free agency approaches and we move towards the 2016 season. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious.
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
In my very first NFL game, I completed my first pass to Hall of Fame running back Marshall Faulk. I threw a touchdown in that same game to Marvin Harrison, who will be inducted into the Hall of Fame this August. The quarterback for our opponent, the Miami Dolphins, was, after my dad, my favorite player, Hall of Famer Dan Marino, who on the first third down of the game completed a 25-yard skinny post, and it was the damnedest throw I'd ever seen. Later, I completed a pass to tight end Marcus Pollard down the middle. There's a scripture reading, 2 Timothy 4:7, I have fought the good fight, and I have finished the race, I have kept the faith. Well, I fought a good fight, I finished my football race, and after 18 years, it's time. God bless all of you, and God bless football.
That's Peyton Manning yesterday getting a little choked up. You probably would, too, if you had that career and you ended it with a Super Bowl championship.
No doubt.
You got to go out on the highest of high notes as far as that goes, Tony.
Sure. There may be people that loved football as much as Peyton Manning, but I don't think anybody loved it more. Like, it's just, it's one of those things. It's, there may be other guys who have that same level, but nobody was higher than Peyton Manning.
Let's welcome in now the Jaguars Director of Player Development, Mr. Marcus Pollard, referenced right there.
Yeah.
And along with several other luminaries, Peyton Manning's first game. You think back, can you remember Peyton's debut?
I cannot.
Really? Is that right?
I cannot. Only thing I can recall, when he started talking about his first game, my mind went to the Seattle game. Where he threw his first pass, went for a 92-yard touchdown slant route to Marvin Harrison.
Okay.
Preseason game. Regular season game, I cannot remember that game at all.
Well, yeah, do you remember your first regular season game?
Yes, I do.
What, give us some details.
Some details was I got activated from the practice squad. It was against the Carolina Panthers.
Okay.
In Carolina. It was two snaps. I was the second tight end to win in the game. And
Did you win your snaps?
No, the ball was ran away from me. We're not running to that guy. We're running this guy.
Well, they knew, man. You were a silky smooth receiving tight end to be in the National Football League.
And see, the thing, I think at that point I realized that I wanted to be more of a complete tight end because I didn't want people saying, "Well, he can't run block. He can only catch the ball."
Sure.
So I bust my tail every day to try to. Become as complete as possible.
You know, look, obviously now you work for a rival of the Colts, but you're in a unique situation for us here, having played as many years as you did. I think the fifth most touchdown receptions of anyone for Peyton Manning. Marcus Pollard has that. The stories, sometimes legends build upon themselves and it gets to the point of the absurd. You know, the stories about his preparation, and you heard him yesterday talking about how nervous he got and how tense and how pressure filled that was to keep up that level of preparation. What was it like? I mean, what was he truly different than other quarterbacks you saw go through the process?
Not like I've ever seen. We go to his house and he had an entire video department in his basement. I was like, "Pete, what are you doing with all this stuff?" I said, "Bro, I got to get ready." He had a full size screen. All the audio, video stuff that we had at the facility, he had it in his basement. And to me, he said it was just part of his preparation. To me, when you can spend that kind of resources to prepare for a game at home, when you can do the same thing at the office, to me, it shows your level of dedication.
How much easier has it gotten, Marcus, just in general, with tablet technology and laptops and all that, that you can basically give guys cut-ups so quickly and take home, and here's exactly what we need you to focus on, and you don't have to come into the film room. You can do so much of this work on your own.
Yeah, to me, it's a huge improvement for the players to be able to have that kind of technology where back in the day, he probably had somebody cutting up film, downloading into another form of media outlet so he can watch it. And now today, you got these iPads, these MacBooks and all this kind of stuff where you can just actually have
Microsoft Surface tablets, the official tablet of the National Football League, Marcus. Come on!
Let's get the shout out in there, and I appreciate it. But when you can have Mike Perkins send that stuff to you at the house, you don't even have to come in. To me, it makes your study time so much easier.
What can Blake Bortles learn from the career of Peyton Manning?
I think, you know, Blake could be one person, but I think everybody can learn something from Peyton. Just his dedication to the game, his love and passion, as we talked about earlier. Not to say that Blake didn't have those things, because he does. But just the way Peyton prepared each and every game. If you blitzed him one time, if you did it one time ever, you're not going to get him on that blitz.
He'd remember it.
Yes, you're going to have to create something totally different that you've never done before. And there's only so many things you can do when it comes to blitzes, because he's seen them all. And to me, that's the one thing. He's always prepared for the blitzes. And someone asked me about playing with him when it came to linemen and blocking. He made it easy because he knew where the blitzes were coming from. He's going to get rid of the ball in 2 seconds. So as long as you didn't get beat clean off the line, you're going to look like a Pro Bowler blocking.
you didn't have to hold that block all
day. Not very long at all.
Well, Marcus, you got to play in a couple other spots away from Peyton Manning as well at the end of your career. Just how different was it? Everyone talks about the level of preparation with Peyton Manning and what he was able to do as kind of that coordinator, that coach on the field. How different was it when you left Peyton Manning, just the way offenses ran outside of that?
Yeah, it was different, especially my couple of years in Detroit where we did more huddling and call the plays. And Joey Harrington was the quarterback 1 year and John Kitna the other. But both very brilliant quarterbacks, had good careers. But to play in an offense with Peyton, the way he orchestrated getting us in the best protection, getting us in the best run play possible, was something unique. And every team that I played with after that, except when I spent a couple days in New England for a cup of coffee, Tom Brady was that way. Tom really focused on preparing. No huddle. Let's go fast. Let's get the ball thrown. Let's get the ball ran quickly. But stops in between there, they were huddling and kind of slow pace. You know, I'm so used to a fast break kind of offense that I played in with Peyton.
Yeah, and those guys now are longtime veterans, and they expect the rest of the team to catch up with their pace. And there's really no catch-up time. You need to be where we're at right now, right? And that's the thing. Different situation here in Jacksonville as the entire offense is growing together, right? So many of the key pieces, Marcus. What gave you the most encouragement from year one from Blake Bortles' rookie season to last year, but that includes the rookie seasons of Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns and Marquise Lee, and then the addition of Julius Thomas and T.J. Yeldon, just at the skill positions, what was the most encouraging or among the most encouraging signs you saw last year?
I saw it coming in the offseason. A-Rob and Hurns all hung out here all offseason, worked with Blake. They flew out to California. JT worked with Blake in California. So to me, it started in the offseason. And to me, it just permeated into the season to see them gel and connect and feed off one another the way they did, to see Blake blossom into this franchise-type quarterback that he has the ability to be, was very encouraging to see TJ come in and play the way he did, and to have so many guys step up and play big for us offensively was huge. And so many of them being young is even more promising.
Did you see any frustration from Julius, you know, coming in as a free agent? He's a guy who obviously the expectations were out the roof for him coming here to Jacksonville. The injury at the beginning of the year, it felt like it took him a while, even when he got back on the field, to find any kind of chemistry there with Blake Bortles. Did you sense any frustration from him, talk to him at all?
Yeah, I think he was probably a little bit frustrated, but not so much about catching balls or plays that he was getting. I think he's more frustrated about his injury. You don't get to the level of play that he did in Denver with Peyton and come here and not have that same you didn't lose your ability along the way. So to me, I think he was a little bit irritated because he had to battle that finger, and having that finger kind of set him back and had to catch up. And I think he did a fantastic job of catching up once he got back in playing shape.
Yeah, and we sit here and say, how could the passing offense possibly put up bigger numbers? Because you assume, you hope the defense is going to be better. That means you're going to be in more games, maybe leading more games in the fourth quarter. Hopefully the running game will be better. You're going to lean on that. So maybe you're not having as many 4-minute drives at the end of ball games, and so maybe that takes away. But some of Julius Thomas should be better, right? If he's healthy, he should be better. T.J. Yeldon could be a bigger part of the receiving game. Marquise Lee can be a bigger part. Rashad Green could be a bigger part. So maybe, you know, Allen Robinson's numbers are not going to go up. Maybe Allen Hurns' numbers are not going to go up. But there is room for growth.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you just named a few guys, Hurns and A-Rob, their numbers may not go up. When you have Julius and you still have Denard and you have T.J. Yeldon, and you got so many guys that can make plays. And you mentioned R.G., Rashad Green. To me, the sky's the limit for this offense. And to be so young and so talented, to keep these guys together could be something very special. And to me, I compare it a lot to what we did in Indy. You had four or five guys that could play receiver. You had two or three guys that can play tight end. You had a great running back in Edgerrin James and a Hall of Fame quarterback in Peyton Manning. So, to me, I see a lot of comparisons that we had in Indianapolis starting out early.
Outside of Tariq Glenn, I can't name many offensive linemen from that era. Right? I mean, seriously.
Jeff Saturday.
Jeff Saturday, of course. Jeff Saturday. But it was – the feeling is when the quarterback is that in command of the offense that, like you said, you didn't have to hold your blocks long. They didn't have to hold their blocks as long, right? I mean, it makes everybody's job – that much easier. One thing Peyton struggled with, I would say, relative to the rest of his career was early on, very high interception totals, right? His rookie season, he had 26, 28. He had 15, 15, 23, and 19. Those were his first five-year totals. And people look at Blake, and they're like, man, come on, 18 interceptions, bro, you're killing us now. He did. The pick sixes can be devastating plays. There's no question about that. So I don't know how many pick sixes Peyton Manning threw, but you know, the TD interception ratio was pretty positive for Blake, all things considered, last year. How do you, as you've watched quarterbacks develop in your career, how difficult is it to maintain that willingness to take chances and fit the ball into tight spots, but at the same time try to be a little conservative with how often you turn that thing over?
I think one of the things that Blake will probably grow from this past season was the interceptions. Lost balls that, you know, were bad snaps and, you know, bobble fumbles and that kind of stuff. So I think him throwing the ball in there, I think he's a gunslinger. I don't think he's going to get shy from throwing that ball in there, especially, you know, with training with the receivers that he's got and the coaching that he's got here. I don't think he's going to be gun shy at all about fighting in those tight windows.
When's the last time Marcus Pollard was on the golf course?
Yeah, probably last October.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Are you sick? Are you okay?
I'm struggling. I had knee surgery, and so it's taking me a little while to get back out there. Hopefully, I'll get back out in May.
I don't know too many guys who enjoy it as much as you do, my man. Holy smokes, till May.
Until May. I'm struggling.
Wow, and this is such the time of year to get it in, right?
Beautiful time of year.
Oh, my goodness. You're not quite as busy. Or what? Give us your typical day. Like, you're a director of player development for the Jags. So at this time of year, when not everybody's around, what does a typical day or a typical week look like for you?
Well, right now it's about preparation for the young guys that are coming in. I'm scripting meetings. People that I want to have to come in and present. This time last year, I was writing reports for some of the guys that I went up and interviewed during the combine, but I didn't get a chance to go to combine this year. So it's a little bit slower, so I'm taking more opportunities to build those relationships, some guys we may have coming in free agent-wise. So it's giving me some time just to step back and build relationships. A lot of what I do is about relationships. If you can form a relationship with guys, and when they struggle, whenever they need something, they can always look to you first, and that's what I enjoy.
All right.
Before we let you go, going back to Peyton Manning here for just a moment, two mm-hmm. things here. What does Omaha mean? And what of all the stuff he did at the line of scrimmage, all that yelling he did, how much of that meant nothing?
That was two very good questions. The first one, Omaha, I have no idea. That was something that he developed once he got to Denver. We didn't have that call in Indianapolis. And the second of which is all the hand gestures and the yelling and the gyrations, 90% of it was fake.
Yeah.
It was all to try to disguise what we were doing offensively, hopefully get the defense to declare what they were going to do, and then go from there. So a lot of part of what he was doing was just smoke screen just to get us in a better play.
Yeah, I saw Teddy Bruschi yesterday on ESPN. He was like, Belichick told us every time we played the Colts, he was like, just ignore him. Don't listen to a thing he said. He's not telling you anything. Don't listen. Just play the defense. Just play the defense. Don't listen to this guy. He's trying to confuse you.
Omaha. I can remember being playing. The Jags went to Denver and played out there last year, 2 years ago. And I can see it. I can still see it plain as day. He did this signal like cannon, cannon, cannon. And I'm thinking, no, there's no way. There's no way he's going to let these guys know what's about to happen. And sure enough, Play action, touchdown to Wes Welker.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So in that case, Cannon.
He told you, Cannon.
Right.
And so he was supposed to just a little short hitch or something like that, but he did that and then took off. So they talked about it prior too, and I'm just going to tell everybody, Cannon, everybody in the stadium, Cannon. It's totally fake. Totally fake. Touchdown.
Touchdown to Wes Welker. Yep. All right. And you said, I heard you on another network discussing the Omaha thing. It was a Denver thing,
yeah.
Right? Not a.
Yeah, it's not an indie thing.
Did he have an indie thing? Did he have something like that? Or was he just, it was all just the flapping and
everything? We would do ice cream.
Ice cream.
Ice cream.
Different kinds of ice cream?
Different kinds of ice cream. When I say ice cream, it means nothing. I can say Rocky Road, vanilla, chocolate chip. It means nothing. Vanilla, chocolate chip, ice cream. It meant nothing.
That's awesome. How fun is that, man? Let's get up to the line as early as possible so I can speak as many nonsense words as I possibly can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Marcus, it's good to see you. The director of player development for the Jags, Marcus Pollard, longtime Indianapolis Colt, longtime pass catcher from the now retired Peyton Manning. We're glad he's out of the division. He's been out for a while, but we're ready to clear the decks. If Andrew Luck wants to retire early, he can follow him right along, Marcus. I think we'd all be okay with that, man.
Absolutely.
All excited. You excited to see what happens with free agency opening up tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm very excited about the possibilities of guys that we're bringing in to help our ball club get a lot better.
Got a little money to spend, so.
Yeah, got a little bit of that. You know, like to see what we're going to do with Mercedes. I think he's a key cog in this wheel to help us keep rolling forward offensively.
By the way, we heard, I don't think it's been officially announced yet, Avery Jones is signing his restricted free agent tender today, so he will be back.
Ryan Davis.
Ryan Davis did that yesterday, which, as to be expected, got a nice little raise when you've only been making about $500,000 only. To get 2.5 is a nice little bump for him. And, you know, one-year deal, let's see if that gets him back to more of the form that we saw in 2014 out of Ryan Davis. And what's the feeling like generally? You talk to these guys all the time. I mean, what is the optimism level like and their expectation level?
Unbelievable. I think, you know, the way, even though our record didn't say we should have a lot of excitement about going into next year, but these guys are really pumped about going into this coming season with some of the free agent acquisitions that we're going to make.
Do you think that word's getting out around the league? Like are people around the league? I see some writers that are recognizing it. Do you think players, because players talk. It's not like the past.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you think that word is getting out that there's something
absolutely.
Big about to happen?
Absolutely. Something good is about to happen. Gus Bradley says it all the time. Something good is about to happen. And it is. I really feel good about where we're going, the way decisions that Dave and Gus are making for our team. Our offense, the way we played last year, having Ole come in his first year, getting production from our offense where we did, we're going to be much better defensively because we're going to spend some money and get guys in here that can play and get guys that's coming back, get some Derek Marks back healthy. So I'm really excited about where we're going in 2016.
All right, from your lips to Shad's ears and on. Let's get it done. Let's get some signings tomorrow.
Let's do it.
Big names, medium-sized names, little names, as long as they can play.
As long as they can play.
Come on down. Marcus, take care of that knee, my brother, and we'll see you out there on the court sooner rather than later.
Awesome.
Right?
I like it.
There he goes. Marcus Pollard here with us, Director of Player Development for your Jacksonville Jaguars and a longtime teammate of Peyton Manning here with us on Jaguars Today. Coming back with the fan feedback spotlight coming up next, which asked you today what will satisfy you in terms of the Jaguars' efforts in free agency in 2016. We'll get to some of your feedback next right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Is this The Apprentice? Is this in honor of Trump or what?
Trump?
No, yes. No Trump reference here. Just about money. You know, the Jaguars got a lot of money to spend.
Jags do have a lot of money to spend. I wasn't sure if there was a double entendre right there or not. We'll leave it at that. We're best not discussing politics this particular season on Jaguars Today. Don't you think?
Oh, goodness.
Don't you think that's probably the safest route to take, Tony?
Well, it's not like you could say anything worse than they're saying about one another.
True, but, you know, we love all Jaguar fans, Republican, Democrat, socialist, communist, fascist, whatever end of the spectrum you happen to be on. We love you. Listen to Jaguars Today, please. Calvin Johnson, Adam Schefter tweeting out, since entering the league in 2007, leads the National Football League in receiving yards, receiving touchdowns, 100-yard games, and catches of 25 yards or more. That's a pretty good sample size.
For players that have played 100 games or more, he's the all-time leader in yards per game with 81.3 or something like that. That's a bigger number than even Jerry Rice. There's very few numbers that Jerry Rice doesn't hold. That's one that Calvin Johnson's going to hold for quite a while.
He has a single-season yardage record, too, right?
Yeah, almost 2,000 yards. It was like 1943.
Julio's making a run last year.
Yeah.
Making a run, but came up short. That's, I mean, how ridiculously productive he is. I think, to me, first ballot Hall of Fame, no question about it. I don't know if he will be in on the first ballot. I would put him, you know, if I'm voting, though, in that year, Manning, Woodson, Calvin, in that order, but who, I can't imagine right now who will be hanging out there that would jump those guys, at least in their first year of eligibility.
Yeah, we'd have to see, you know, what's coming down
right,
the pipe.
What gets left over.
Like, who's still left out there a little bit, because you are talking, with the numbers we just talked about with Calvin, you're also talking about a guy who's 43rd in career receptions as he retires right now. He's 27th in career yardage, 22nd in career touchdowns. In 9 years playing in the NFL, he's clearly, if you watch Calvin Johnson, he's the best wide receiver of this decade. And that's good enough for me to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm curious to see if those numbers, depending on what else is available to go into the Hall of Fame, hurts him his first year.
And the pace he was on. I mean, would he be a better player? Would he be more Hall of Fame worthy if he kind of like limped through three more 1,000-yard seasons or 950-yard seasons?
And that would
seasons.
Put him in the top 10 all-time in receiving if he did do two more seasons of 1,000 yards.
Right. And would that make him a better player? I don't think so.
No.
You know, so for me, it's like Gale Sayers. The guy was great when he was great, and that...
Oh, I'm with you.
Yeah,
you
know, he was great plenty long enough.
But I don't know how voters are going to feel about him in 5 years.
I hear you. I'm just saying, for me, I mean, Charles Woodson, phenomenal. Man, I mean,
Woodson and Manning.
Right. Those guys, that's a hell of a first ballot,
yeah,
right there with those three players right there. The best at their positions, arguably, at least in the eras that they played. Arguably. All right. All you Brady supporters out there. By the way, the guy got all over my case yesterday about saying whatever he thought I said about Peyton Manning, that I would have had Tom Brady basically assassinated over the same exact thing. I went back through his text. Hardcore Patriot fan, as suspected, that would be the case. So we asked you today on both the text line, the tweets, and the Facebook page, what will it take to satisfy you? What will it take for you to be satisfied with the Jaguars' efforts in free agency this year? Let me give you a couple from Facebook, Tony, because they're a little bit longer here. Joshua, make some moves that show you're serious about being a playoff team this year. Get some guys on defense at all three levels that are considered top three free agents at their respective positions. Make some moves on offense as well. Add some guys like Mack and maybe even a respectable running back to help Yeldon and Robinson out next year. They could be brought in to potentially push Gray, too, during the preseason. Well, I mean, if the reports for Ian Rappaport are accurate, I think you're maybe talking about a cut above that at running back. Doug Martin is getting some interest from the Jaguars, according to Rappaport, and Chris Ivory, who I thought was a perfect fit in this free agency period from that position, also getting some. Damon said, I'll be satisfied if the free agents help get the Jags to 10, 11, or 12 wins this year. Well, you're not going to know that for a while. Miguel said, give me Irvin, a number one cornerback, maybe Smith or Jenkins, and a free safety as well. Mack and Malik would be great too, but if we sign those three I mentioned, I'll be more than happy. That seems like a more reasonable approach to it. Seth says, get your guys, don't care who they are. I just don't want to hear players signing with other teams talking about how impressed they were with Jacksonville's offer. Right? Better that they were impressed with the offer than not and say good things about them than not. Better yet if they are so impressed that they decide to take said offer and come here to Jacksonville. What do we get on Twitter?
From Demetrius, address both lines of scrimmage, linebacker and RB2. Number one, Malik Jackson. Two, Robert Ayers. Three, Bruce Irvin. Four, Alfred Morris. From Mike, be playing for a playoff spot or have it locked up by week 17. Again, you're not going to know that in the next 2 weeks. From Black Dog, you don't always get what you want, but two big names on D and one on offensive line, we just might find we get what we need. From Chris,
oh, clever.
Getting difference makers, not average free agents. Example, Sergio, getting us some wins next year. From Colby, at least three significant defensive free agent signings. From Duval Doom, three players that directly address needs on defense. If we go after someone in offense, then I want four. From Eric, fortify the D-line with ends, grab a safety, linebacker depth, add solid left guard for the O-line, and a quality depth running back.
Just saw Jerry Sullivan walk by. I tried to give him the Vulcan mind meld and try to determine if he felt that Calvin Johnson was a no-doubt first ballot Hall of Famer. I'll see if I can grab him down the hall coming up in a few minutes. So, oh, look, there's a variety of opinions. I think people would at least hope that there's one kind of big name. Is Olivier, again, Olivier Vernon to me is not a big name player. He's become a big name free agent due to the position he plays, his age, and several other factors. Pass rushers that are good at his age don't make it to free agency very often. And you've got the Dolphins saying, you know what, we're not opting to pay him a bunch of money. We'd rather split that up, and our resources are better spent on a Mario Williams and somebody else for the same amount of money. At least that appears to be the direction that they're going with Olivier Vernon at this point in time. As we mentioned a moment ago, Avery Jones signs his restricted free agent tender, so he's in the fold for about $2.5 million this year. It's official now. And also, a caller wanted to know how much of a chunk of the Jags cap space should they save to sign the core guys, Bortles, Hearns, and Allen Robinson. I don't know what the figure is, but that's always been part of the calculation. But here's the thing, Tony, Blake Bortles, you don't need to sign for two more full seasons.
No.
Right? You don't need to save that much for me in terms of Bortles, because you're going to create more cap space along the way. You can always create cap space in the National Football League, right? I mean, all these teams, oh, they're up against it, and then all of a sudden,
we talked about Miami last week.
Right, Miami was in trouble.
They're
cleared
$19 million right now.
Right, in a day's time, right? St. Louis is able to do it. Now you have to let go of some aging players to do that, but that's part of the game. But Blake Bortles, you know, the way it works right now under the CBA, if you're a first-round draft pick, you sign a four-year deal with a team option for the fifth year. So after next year, they could give Blake a contract, but they have him under team control for two more seasons. So it would be much more likely that they would wait until after his fourth year and see where things stand and what kind of deal that he's going to get. So you've got two more years on that. Allen Robinson is eligible for a deal next offseason, as are any of the other draft picks from his class. Allen Hurns, not being a draft pick, enables him to get a contract extension done now if the Jags wanted to. 2 years is what you need to wait on that, and we have advocated that to space these guys out. Now, look, they're thinking through this. That's basically the reason they hired John Idzik to come in here to manage, help them manage a cap, not just for the present, but for the future as well, and for, you know, multi-levels of the future. What's going to happen? What if we sign this guy? How does this impact future plans? Trust me, they will put enough aside to secure the services of Blake Bortles and their wide receivers.
No, they're gonna be ready to sign all those guys back here in Jacksonville in the next 3 years or so. And maybe you look at it, you got $80 million or whatever it is, you knock off $20 million because that's what it costs you to sign your draft class. Right? So it's actually 60. And that's kinda like, that's a league wide thing too that doesn't get factored in a lot when we talk about free agency getting ready right here. Those teams that have $25 million in cap space right now, they don't really have
right.
$25 million because they still have to sign their draft class too. But again, you can maneuver things around a little bit if you get into a pinch, depending on what you do in free agency here over the course of the next couple weeks. So say they really look at it like they have $60 million to spend. Maybe they do want to push back, you know, whatever they're expecting to do with Hearns, and if they're going to re-sign Mercedes Lewis and any of these other things they're going to do. Maybe the Jags look at it like they have $40 million to spend in free agency this year. But I guarantee you that's the way they're thinking about it in the building. They're not looking at it saying, we got $80 million.
Right.
They know what number they want to spend to this offseason, what they're willing to spend to this offseason, and they probably won't budge much beyond that unless a great opportunity opens up for them.
Right. You know, be that Olivier Vernon, be that Malik Jackson, be that both of them, be that Bruce Irvin.
Right.
I think they'll get somebody that is on everyone's short list of players, and maybe more than one tomorrow, but I do think they'll land a fish tomorrow, so to speak, and they'll probably also land some other guys that you're less, you know, jazzed about. Doesn't mean they won't be good players coming in here, you know. We don't know a whole lot about J.R. Sweezy, but if they sign him, as long as he's an upgrade over what they had, it doesn't make it a bad signing just because his name is not Osemele or Mack on the offensive line. But, hey, who knows? You know, Dave Caldwell keeps his cards close, and, you know, we'll see how it all pans out. Maybe they will get – imagine if they get Doug Martin, Bruce Irvin, and Olivier Vernon tomorrow, for instance. I mean, that'd be quite a haul, I think, to start things off. And then you probably need to start thinking a little bit lower level beyond that. A lot of talk that they're in or interested in Malik Jackson. I haven't heard it as much – Here, as I've heard from outside places, although John Osier said yesterday he does think they're going to make a run at Malik. We'll see. I haven't heard much over the last 24 hours about anybody really being associated with Malik Jackson, other than speculation that the Jags would be a player for him, but nothing concrete on as to who he's talking to at this point in time. So it's that time of year. It's all fun. It's all rumors, and we'll figure it out as it goes official tomorrow at about 4 o'clock. All right, that does it for us today. Thanks to Brian Coughlin for joining us today. Yes, that's the family name you recognize so well, talking about the Tom Coughlin J-Fund Wine Tasting Gala, again, next Friday night at the Wells Fargo Center from 6:30 until 9:30. It'll go on March 18th, and all funds raised support the Tom Coughlin J-Fund Foundation and their mission to help local families tackle childhood cancer. Tickets still available if you go to tcjfund.org. That's tcjayfund.org, or you can call 543-2599. That's 543-2599. For the J Fund. We appreciate Brian stopping by. It's a great event if you've never been to it before. And as well as Marcus Pollard, the Jags Director of Player Development and a longtime teammate of Peyton Manning's, talking about not only Peyton's career, but where the Jags are headed, in his opinion, in 2016. Tomorrow, free agency opens up. And then Thursday, Tony, we're hoping if the Jags are able to sign some players on the first day, that we've already been told, make sure we've got room to bring in some of those guys on Thursday and interview those players.
So I was told we'll have Malik Jackson in studio on Thursday.
You're lying.
Yeah, I am.
All right.
But I have heard that Malik Jackson's going to be in somebody's studio in probably Chicago, Oakland, or Jacksonville on Thursday.
I would imagine that is the case, something along those lines. But so they put it this way. They're thinking that they're going to strike quickly on at least some players. Who those players are, we'll find out over the course of the next day and a half or so. That does it for us today. For Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, and for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. We're signing off. We'll say hello to XL Primetime next, right here on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.